Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This is the Runner's World Podcast.
Welcome to the Runner's World Podcast with me, Rick Pearson.
And me, Ben Hobson.
Today we're speaking with runner and poet Helen Mort about the lure of wild places.
So, how are you, mate?
I'm a bit sore, frankly, because yesterday I ran 20 miles around the wilds of South London, yeah.
This was the much anticipated 20 miles.
Yeah, a lot of hype beforehand, and a lot of hype, not a lot of water. I think that was, I could have done with less hype and more water as a rule.
Right. But did you treat it like a long training run, or did you treat it like a race?
Yeah, somewhere in between, I think. In that, it's me and my best mate George, and we were like, look, let's try and do the equivalent of like 3:15 marathon pace, basically. So quicker than you would ordinarily do a long run for me, but a little bit off what your marathon race pace would be. That's probably a really dumb way of doing a 20 miler. Do you know what I mean? You're probably not getting the training benefit of going really hard, and you're going harder than an easy run. So I'm in that kind of dead zone.
There are no more rules, Rick. We are in a period of zero rule running. So I think you do whatever you want.
Yeah. Also, because you know I'm normally manufacturing my own gels, Ben, as I've talked about before.
I do.
But I didn't have time, so I went with another brand, a recognised brand, and this isn't just me saying this, but yeah, I got some pretty uncomfortable cramps in the last 5K, so the splits came down a little bit during that period.
Were they a brand that you've used before?
I've used one gel once before. I think it's just, to be honest, not using gels for years, and then going to a gel. I think any gel would have played up in my stomach, because it's just... just not used
that's,
to that stuff.
Yeah, that's what I was to sort of to be the great defender of gels, which I am famous for. Yeah. I was going to say, whatever you've done, you probably would have got a little bit of a. That's pretty rookie. It's pretty rookie just having a gel off the bat in a race scenario.
Yes, agreed. Oh, well, I'll tell you what, I shouldn't complain, Ben, because distance running is officially a very easy sport. So,
oh, good.
So that's according to there was a table that was going round. So the table was titled 60 Most Difficult Sports, and it was collated by a company called Unbiased America Sports, which is an interesting title.
Are they unbiased towards American sports or unbiased to all sports?
Well, I think...
but they're based in America.
There's definitely some bias going on, because so in this table, there was 60, obviously, and boxing was ranked number one, which I haven't necessarily got a problem with, because I think boxing training, yeah. But first of all, I don't want to annoy any boxers, so I haven't got a problem with it. And also, like, the training for boxing is incredibly difficult, and also the dangers involved are immense, aren't they? So that can be top. That's fair enough. But then running didn't appear until number 38, and when it did, it was in the form of track and field sprinting, right? And then then distance appeared number 41, and middle distance appeared at number 43, a couple of places above table tennis. Now, to put this into perspective, volleyball was ranked 21, and skateboarding was 37. So you think, right. I think whoever's behind that list, they haven't run a mile, have they? They haven't run their best mile when they're kind of to put, you know, middle distance running, you know, significantly below volleyball, somewhere around the same difficulty and sort of grit required as a sort of, you know, competitive set of table tennis feels kind of wrong.
I don't know how they judging what I mean. This is difficult, right? So they're obviously running, they don't think is difficult because everyone can run. That whole that notion that everyone can run,
yes.
Right? So they're not thinking it's difficult. Whereas
it's a word that's it's strange. Some of the sports are up the top, so rugby's quite high as well. So they seem so difficulty seems on this table to imply a certain amount of like courage and guts, basically. But obviously, but you're right. They're factoring in kind of I guess skill is what they're what it's looking at. But I do think running's it's underestimated in these kind of general surveys. I think maybe because it's not, it lacks some of the sort of box office appeal of some of these, you know, bigger sports.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think it's because we are looking from the inside out. As runners, we kind of have a greater sense of like the work that goes into being better at running rather than perhaps recreational. The view of a recreational, but then they're talking about sprint and track and field, and that's very specialist.
Yeah, would you say that? I don't want to annoy any sprinters here because running's a broad church,
First of all, mate, they're much bigger than you. Yeah, sprinters they're much bigger than you.
But would you say, like, just passionately, that sprinting is more difficult than distance running? I don't think you get a lot of people who'd say that. I mean, it's equally impressive. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying it isn't, but from a difficulty perspective, is it more difficult than absolutely gritting it out over a marathon? I don't think it is.
I don't know. I think that it's more difficult in the fact that your performance has to be so precise over a very short period of time. Whereas, you know, the leaderboard, unless you're racing against like Mr. Journay, the leaderboard can change in a distance race quite dramatically, depending on how that day's going, if you see what I mean. Whereas you boil that sprinting, that whole experience, but boiled down to its finest essence. So I think that, like, where there's room for errors that don't put you in a bad position with distance running, I think any error within sprinting is you're done. That's it.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you. I think at the top level, I think it is small errors in marathon running, stuff like hydration and like strategy, stuff that you probably don't have to consider. Like, I feel like with the 100-meter sprinting, like, as exciting as it is, it's basically you obviously go out and run as hard as you can, and the quickest person wins. Do you know what I mean? With marathon running, has that sort of nuance of like, went off too hard at the start, didn't get my nutrition right. Blah blah blah. I don't know. Anyway,
I don't know.
You're never going to.
It's a tricky one. Yeah. I would say the other side. I'm going to be on the side of the sprinters on this.
I didn't put you down such a sprinting evangelist, Ben.
Oh, come on! It's the bedrock of our sport, mate.
I don't know. I was surprised. I was disappointed that the distance and middle distance running ranked down closer to table tennis than it did. To boxing on this.
Yeah, table. I mean, that's just out of order.
I think that's wrong. Hey, a quick bit of pseudoscience before we talk with Helen. So
great.
Now, we know a lot of people have taken up running as, you know, during the lockdown period.
Yes.
But to form an exercise habit, it actually takes longer than has been previously believed. So a study of 96 participants, 30 men, 66 women, investigated how long it took for certain habits to form, and they were asked to choose either a healthy eating, drinking or exercise behaviour from a list. So this included stuff like running for 15 minutes before dinner, or drinking a bottle of water with lunch, or eating a piece of fruit. And on average, habits took 66 days to form, but with exercise such as running, it took 91 days. So basically 3 months for something to become kind of automatic and habitual. So you've got to stick with it. If you just started running and you're listening to this, give it 3 months and then it should feel like something that you can't do without.
This is the Runner's World Podcast.
Guest of the week. Here in the studio. Guest of the week. Sometimes on the phone. Could be an athlete. Could be a physio. Or a complete unknown.
Helen Moore is a writer, trail runner and climber who lives in Sheffield. She teaches creative writing at Manchester Metropolitan University, and her published works include poetry, fiction, and non-fiction. Helen is the author of Lake District Trail Running and the editor of Waymaking. She was also a judge for the 2019 Banff Mountain Book Prize. We're very excited to speak to her about freedom, fell running, and the appeal of wild places. So Helen, welcome to the Runner's World podcast. Why do you think that poets like yourself may be drawn to wild places?
I can only really speak from my own experience, though obviously there is a tradition of poets like William Wordsworth writing in the fells, writing while they're out walking. But for me, it's something about high places, high wild places in particular, like mountains or the gritstone edges that I have near me in the Peak District, where I get a sense of perspective, I think, from being up high and being free, being out running and being able to look down on my surroundings. It just helps me to see everything a bit more clearly. And that's really useful for something like creative writing, I think, that sense of perspective.
What role does running play in your creative process?
So I actually do. I do like to write, or at least get my ideas for poems or for bits of fiction, or even for nonfiction. While I'm out running, I've always loved that. I do my best writing when I'm running. So I'll sort of take an idea or a line or a phrase or something like that out with me, and I'll go on a run. Obviously, don't have any paper. I don't write it down on my phone or anything like that. I just sort of turn the ideas over and over in my head. And I hope that by the time I get back, the sort of the good ideas will be the ones that have stuck. I'm sure everyone's got a version of that. You know, you have some of your best ideas, don't you, when you're out on a run? Although sometimes you do get back and realise that it was a bit of an endorphin spiked idea. Yeah. It wasn't actually that good after all.
It depends if that idea is, I could definitely do an ultra. I think that's
exactly that kind of idea. That's the kind that I mean.
You're particularly interested in running in the mountains, I guess, or the, like you say, these high wild places. I heard this quote. Someone said that road running is like prose, but running in the mountains is poetry. Is that something that you would sympathise with a quote like that?
Yeah, that's a great quote. I absolutely love that quote. I think it's very true. I think you have to be on your guard all the time, don't you, when you're running in the mountains. One thing I love about poetry is that I think it can often surprise the reader, or it slightly wrong-foots you, or it makes you question what you thought you knew. And often it can say two sort of different things at once. And yeah, road running is more like the narrative of a piece of prose where you don't have to, you sort of keep going and sort of get into a bit of a zone, but running in mountains is very different. You're so aware of every sensation and where your feet are, what you can see. I think it's a very minute by minute kind of experience, which is definitely how I think of poetry.
Do you have any favourite mountains to run in? Are they the local, like the Peak District, or is there somewhere further afield that you sort of love to go if you can?
So I used to live in the Lake District. I was very lucky a few years ago, and I actually wrote a trail running guide to running in the Lake District, and absolutely anywhere around that part of Cumbria is my ideal place to run. I used to love running over Loughrigg Fell and out up to Fairfield, and I was a member of Ambleside AC for a little while. They do a lot of their training run on a sort of weekday evening would just be to run over Fairfield and some of the other mountains behind there. So it was always kind of, or Nabscar or something like that. It was always quite a brutal way to spend your weeknight. But they're my favourites, absolutely. I love the Lake District. I think I discover more about it every time I run there.
And it's, aside from the gingerbread, which is fantastic, is that where Wordsworth's buried?
Yes, that's right, in the churchyard at Grasmere.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
There's a lovely, very tranquil sort of area. And yet, but you can, it is quite strange because you're paying your homage to the dead literary figures, and you can smell the waft of gingerbread from the gingerbread shop all the time. It's a bit of a strange kind of paradox. Yeah.
You sort of talked about the awareness of when you're running in wild places. And I mean, I know that you're talking in context of sort of your surroundings and foot placement and things like that. But equally, there's a sort of a sense that being exposed in an area of mountain running is the accessibility between men and women, and are there additional considerations basically for women who want to run in remote places?
I guess so. I mean, it's not just, I don't think it's just about gender, of course, as well. It's whoever you are, there are going to be different considerations. I was just reading an article a couple of days ago, which was about it was about being black and going into wild places, but particularly going into woodlands and sort of saying that, well, actually, those places that we think of as free and wild for black people might have very frightening historical associations. Yeah. And to do with lynching and horrific fear associated with some wild places. And I think it can be the same in terms of gender, perhaps. The idea of being quite vulnerable perhaps out on your own, although certainly for me I feel a lot safer running in the mountains than I do walking down a street in the evening in an inner city. So I guess I suppose there are some quite practical considerations though. I've been on big expeditions to places like Greenland, not running but mountaineering, and you know, this is the uncomfortable stuff that nobody talks about. Things like what if you had your period in the middle of a glacier, and who do you ask if you're on an expedition full of men? It's those everyday practical things that might come up. Kind of things I think we feel a bit awkward talking about almost, but they're a big consideration if you're an ultra runner or something like that. I know everyone was reading about, I think it was last year when Jasmine Parry won an ultra, and she was pumping breast milk on the way round to so that she could continue to breastfeed her baby and the supply wouldn't run out while she was running. So I guess again those things don't apply to all women, and there might be female runners who don't have children, so I'm not implying that everybody's thinking about those things all the time. We all have lots of different aspects to our identity and our lives. But yeah, I think there are sometimes some very practical considerations when you're out running in the hills, and it's kind of important to talk about them a bit, I think. Yeah.
Well, this is exactly it, because as you mentioned, sort of people who take part in a lot of urban running, it comes with its dangers. And I kind of feel like that people probably don't associate the sort of the two things, and as you say, like the idea of wildness and wilderness and being free in the mountains is actually quite, you know, can be quite a daunting prospect for people.
Yeah, I mean, but put it this way, I've only felt uncomfortable when I've been out running a handful of times, and it has never been in the mountains. It's always been in my hometown when somebody has wound down the window and shouted something abusive at me. It's never been out in the wilderness, but I'm not trying to make light of the dauntingness of going out, and obviously it can be. I've always found it quite affirming when I'm able to go out and run in mountains on my own. It makes me feel quite capable and quite strong. I've always particularly enjoyed that. Although I'm not always brilliant with a compass, I have to admit.
Oh, me neither.
That's my greatest fear. my greatest fear is actually having to be relying on a compass and me knowing what I'm doing. That would be the end of me, I think.
My friend is still mocking me from the time we did the lamb in Scotland, and I tried to take over the navigation towards the end of the race, and I navigated towards the wrong lochan and cost us an hour's detour in the baking heat at the end of a 2-day mountain marathon. Oh. So I don't have a good track record either.
This is the Runner's World podcast.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
You mentioned Jasmine Paris there, and some of the incredible things that she's achieved in wild places while being a mother. But do you think that society still has views women and particularly mothers who take risks and maybe with climbing or trail running, that they look at that slightly differently to how, like, if a bloke went out and did it?
Yeah, I think so. And it's interesting. I don't think it's just, I think it's getting better, but there still is a thing that, you know, when somebody tragically dies in the mountains, if they're a father, we usually find out about that towards the end of the article. Whereas if they're a mother, it's usually in the headline, or that's something that's part of your identity that's made. It's quite a big thing is made of it. I've written a lot in the past, and I'm doing at the moment in a non-fiction book about the mountaineer Alison Hargreaves, who was obviously that was picked up in the press when she died that she was a mum, and lots of people had an opinion about that. But equally, there's the implication, I think, for a lot of very successful athletes, female athletes who don't have children, that they're so single-minded, or that they're doing that because they're trying to replace something else. So you kind of can't win. There's always a question about why you don't have children if you don't. So I think it's difficult either way. Certainly for me, the main difference that I've noticed since I had my son in 2018 is just that I do a lot of bits of trail running now with an off-road buggy. Yeah. And I guess I've noticed mainly that I've got a lot slower because I'm pushing this great big lump. He's getting heavier.
Well, it's good resistance training, that. That'll see you in good stead, that will. Yeah. I mean, it's a very strange time that we're sort of, I think, maybe coming to the near end of, or sort of the beginning of the end of, with lockdown. How's your relationship with wild places changed during it?
Well, I mean, I'm really lucky because I live in Sheffield, sort of on the side of Sheffield that's closest to the Peak District. So even when the lockdown was at its height, I could just about within the hour I was allowed for my exercise, I could run up the hill out, and I could see Burbage Edge. I could just run far enough to see it and then turn back and go downhill back to Sheffield. So I've still felt that contact despite missing being able to go out and to really immerse yourself in those places. I think it's really interesting that a lot of people have taken up running, or perhaps renewed their kind of older relationship with running during this period of time when we've all been much more local. And I think it makes you appreciate the beauty on your doorstep as well. I'm not trying to be overly romantic about that. I know that a lot of people live in places where they might not find much sort of beauty on their doorstep, so I'm not implying that everyone's as lucky as I am to have the Peak close by, but it definitely makes you look differently when you're only going out for sort of an hour a day or something like that. I definitely found that I was observing things a bit differently.
It was really
missing races as well. Yeah, I think it changes your relationship with running when you can't race. So yeah,
I think
sorry, I didn't mean to
no
you.
No, it's just I think that the really sort of possibly a subconscious act is that most of the people who've rediscovered or found running during lockdown have migrated or certainly moved themselves to green spaces where available. And I think that's a sort of a telling sort of side of how the combination of physical well-being and mental well-being perhaps automatically triggers a sort of a need for green space. So there's quite a lot of study around sort of the mental power that the mental benefit that green space has. I think it was quite an interesting takeaway that when people were only allowed to do a certain amount of exercise or a certain type of exercise for a certain amount of time, that parks in London suddenly became very busy with runners because it was sort of natural habitat for that activity.
Absolutely. It's just, obviously I always feel better when I've been for a run, but the difference between going for a run round the pavements and going out somewhere remarkable or just somewhere, as you say, somewhere a bit more green, it's a totally different effect, really. I always tell the people around me to remind me when I'm sad that going running somewhere green will make me feel better. Guaranteed. Absolutely guaranteed.
Is running for you an expression of freedom, would you say?
That's a great question. It is now. In the past, it hasn't been. So when I was younger, I started running when I was about 12, and I ran on the track quite a lot, and I did lots of competitions. And like many people, I think the times in my life when I have been running competitively, whether I've had a goal I had a sub 3-hour marathon goal for ages that I was a bit obsessed with, or whether it was a goal on the track or whatever, I'd actually put quite a lot of pressure on myself. And it wasn't a freedom as much. I like to think it was a freedom, but really it was a bit of a constraint. Or I know those kinds of targets work really well for some people, but for me, I could beat myself up quite a lot. So actually, I've found running much more of a freedom when I've been running more slowly, and times when I've not been very competitive, or I've just returned to running after injury, or particularly now sort of returning to running postpartum, sort of, and running a lot of the time with a baby, I've discovered a freedom and a kind of a joy in it that perhaps I think I hadn't fully realised before, because I do just go out when I can, when I want to, and for the sheer joy of it, not because I want to run a certain time or because I'm worried about whether other people will think I've my running's gone downhill or something like that. I just think very differently about it these days. And I realise that actually, this is kind of bringing us full circle, that was what I loved about things like fell running and trail running in the first place. When I started doing those things with a background as a track runner, I remember starting to do fell running and thinking, oh, this is much more enjoyable, because it's not all about can you break such and such a time for 1500 meters. It was much more about responding to your body's demands and the demands of the terrain, and I think that's very much what I run for these days.
Is that sort of perhaps the greatest lesson that running's taught you then, perhaps, is a sort of a reality check on what's important? Or is there another greater lesson that running's ever taught you so far?
I think that's definitely been a big lesson. It's taught me a lot of things. It's taught me that I've got a lot more self-discipline than I thought, and can cope with pain quite well. But also, I think because my running has been very, very up and down, and I went from sort of winning races when I was a teenager to then sort of later on coming last, literally coming last. I remember my dad, who's 35 years older than me, overtaking me in a fell run when I'd come back to running. He still never let me live that down. But it's taught me that it's harder to finish last than it is to finish first, even though you're running more slowly. And that it's just as important to, you're trying as hard to keep going when you're not doing well, and that those are the times when you really need to put the effort in, and those are very valuable times in running as well, I think. And so I don't fear those things anymore, I suppose. I wouldn't have the same kind of worry about that I once did.
Yeah, I think that's a really good lesson. Well, finally, Helen, could you read us one of your poems or pieces of writing that are kind of inspired by running or the great outdoors?
Yeah, sure. I'm actually going to do one from memory. So you have to hope I don't forget it.
Great.
It's one of the early poems that I wrote about running, and I wrote it while I was out running in my head. So that's the reason that I'm able to remember poems like this, is because they came, and it's about running and early in the morning when there's no one else around. And it's just called Fox Miles, and it goes like this. Supple as a dream, I can't call back. A vixen in the hedgerow's matted black is startled out to skirt the dawn and vanish with the dark, her flame-bright tail extinguished by the railings of the park. But first, she bolts across an empty road and keeps her pace with mine. I slow to look at her across the gap. We run in time. She turns her face. Her eyes flare in the artificial light. And then she finds a trapdoor in the night, a corridor towards the sun that she slinks down alone and covers miles she might mistake for home. And what she sees, she cannot tell. But what she knows of distances and doesn't say, I know as well. That's it. It's from a collection called
Vision Street.
That was great.
That was really great. Yeah. That's fab.
Helen, thanks so much for coming on the Runners World podcast, talking about your running and poetry and wild places. It was lovely to talk to you.
Oh, not at all. Thanks for having me. I'm not just saying this. I used to read the magazine when I first started running.
Oh, cool.
When I was a teenager, and kind of ever since. And I kind of really idolised running magazines when I was a kid. So yeah. I never imagined that I'd be on the podcast.
Well, we're honoured to have you on. Thanks very, very much for doing the poem at the end. That was great.
Thank you.
That was really nice. Thank you so much.
This is the Runner's World podcast.
So that brings us to the end of this week's Runner's World podcast. A big thanks to our guest, Helen Mort, and to you, of course, for listening.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavourless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.